I want to hear your version of the snake story.
My version? Okay, well, I'm in the front of the class. I'm probably 30 slides in, maybe a couple more, 50 slides.
You're in there. I had just got done settling down. I was out moving targets and painting and everything, and I drove the Ranger back.
Mm-hmm. So our classroom's just an oversized Connex. So I'm all the way in the front. It's a long one, too. So I'm all the way in the front. I've got the PowerPoint going on. And Mike sits in the back at the opening of the Connex. It's 90.
Just so I don't interrupt the course when you're talking, I got to get up, take pictures, go and run up to the line, make sure all the brass buckets are out.
Right. And it's hot out. I mean, yesterday before it cooled off, we had some liquid air conditioning yesterday. But beforehand, it's about 90 degrees. We got both doors open in the Connex. We got a light breeze trying to cool us off.
Setting
so it's not a
scene, right?
Right, we're setting the scene, man. So it's not a sweat box. But it has the potential to be a sweat box, but the goal is get out of there in time before it becomes a sweat box. So I'm racing through my PowerPoint. I'm about 35 slides in out of a 75 slide PowerPoint maybe. And all of a sudden I hear the folding aluminum metal chair move. Then I see all the students in the back jump up, and it's like
a
wave.
Rush to the front.
There's a rush towards me. Well, as I kind of come,
someone was like, "Get him!"
Yeah. So now I turn around because I'm like facing the slide and reading it. I turn around and I see everybody kind of like a wave. It's like a pulse wave.
Yeah.
Everybody moves forward, but then Mike goes out. And I see just Mike kind of like feet in the air because he jumped that high. And his feet are in the air at the top of the Connex. And I see him land out there. And then it hits me what's going on. Underneath where Mike was sitting, right next to his, under his chair, literally, like right where his
down
hand.
Down to the right of my chair.
Yes, like right where your hand
bad
would.
Bad breath distance.
Is a rattlesnake. And he's pissed the frig off.
So I seen this rattlesnake earlier that morning. He trapped me in the shitter.
Okay.
So I came around the Connex and I seen him. He was slithering. He was probably, I don't know, maybe 10 feet or something like that. And he was shaking his tail. And I was like, where is that coming from? I looked over and I can kind of see the silhouette of him because it was still early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the silhouette of him kind of slithering. And I was like, ooh, rattlesnake. I'm going to go in here. So I went in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Hung out in there for about the right amount of time and came back out. And I was like, all right, he's gone. So as soon as everybody started showing up, I even said, first thing I said that morning was, hey guys, watch out, watch your step, look underneath, what's going on? There's a rattlesnake out here. I don't know where he went. He was over in this
area. You had the shotgun out. Because when I came out,
shotgun out,
I'm like, what's up with the shotgun, dude?
Yeah, there's a rattlesnake around here.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to deal with him. So I'm sitting in the back of the class. You're 30 slides in. And I hear, and I was like, oh no. And I look down to my right, and he's in the don't tread on me strike pose,
mm-hmm.
right? And
he's all Gadsden out.
Yeah. So I jumped up.
He's a racist.
And said, oh shit. And the dude that was in front of me jumped up and said, oh shit. But he didn't know what he was saying
oh shit
about.
Too.
He was just saying, oh shit, because I said, oh shit.
It was a commotion.
Yeah. And then everybody started looking around, and I hear, there's a rattlesnake under Mike's chair. And I don't have time to say anything else because I was like, all right. I grabbed a folding chair and I folded it because I was like, I'm going to beat this thing to death with a folding chair.
Nice. You're going WWE on it.
Yeah, I was like, all right, fold this chair up and I'm going to beat him to death. But he was in like the perfect defensive position because now he's in between my chair and the wall. And there's a picture floating around on Facebook. You guys can see it. It's right down at the bottom of my chair. And
like, you can't get a swing at him.
I can't get a swing at him. And every time I get closer, he lunges at me. So I'm like, okay, what are we going to do here? Frank goes, there's a snake under Mike's chair. Someone take a picture. And I look back and I'm like, fucking really, dude? All right, well, here's what we're going to do. So I use the chair as a shield to get out of the Connex. And I get out of the Connex and Frank's shouting from inside the classroom, there's a machete in my truck. Okay, where is it? It's in the back seat. All right, perfect. So I open the back door. And if you've ever seen Frank's vehicle, it's just jam-packed full of shit. And I'm looking at it going, okay, where is this machete? So I dig through a few things, I find the machete, I pull it out. I come back around the corner, I'm like pieing it off.
Right. He's watching you the whole time.
And he's still looking
tracking
in my direction.
At me. He's ignoring all of us.
Yeah, he doesn't care about the 10 other people he could take advantage of at this point. So I'm like, I bang the machete on the side of the Connex. And he lunges at me again, but I still can't get a swing because he's between the chair.
The chair, right.
So I'm like, okay. So Frank goes, man, only if we had a suppressed pistol. And I was like,
because we didn't want to use the shotgun in the Connex, because right. we're in the Connex and everybody's backed up in there and it's a Connex. And do you want to shoot a shotgun when none of us have Air Pro or anything?
Right.
And it'll go through the side.
So I'm like, light bulb goes off. I was like, I have a suppressed pistol in my truck. I had it when we were camping the last weekend.
Right.
My daughter was shooting it. So I was like, I have a suppressed pistol. And you're like, you what? I said, I have a suppressed pistol. I'll be right back. So I go back out to my truck and I grab the suppressed pistol and I come back in. And I'm like, all right, got everything lined up. I loaded a mag, came back in, shot this fucking snake 10 times. Hit him 10 times.
Yeah, but just not in the right spot.
I couldn't hit him in the head because he was like Neo. He just kept dodging these little 22 rounds back and forth.
You got his rattler.
I got his rattler. I shot him like all up in his stomach or neck or whatever you want to call a snake's anatomy.
Right.
Shot him all up. And I'm like, dude, this is not working out. So one of the students, Jeremy, grabs a stick that was laying in the back. It was like one of those target
yeah,
sticks.
Yeah, it was a target stand, right, right. Like a one by one or whatever.
Yeah, so he starts kind of shoving him out, like pushing him. And then the stick breaks and he's like, ah, fuck. So we get him out of the Connex and he's still trying to lunge at me. So Jeremy takes the stick and pins his head down. And I just point blank shoot him in the top of the head.
Mm-hmm.
And then we dumped him off in a ditch somewhere.
We skull capped the man after that. And so Mike had his brains coming out his chin after that.
So then, I don't want to say it was about, not even 5 minutes later, I was in the back of the classroom. I'm looking around because I'm hypersensitive now.
He's jumping every minute.
Right? And I like scrape my foot across some grass that was
in the
bottom of the
Connex. The grasshoppers out here make
that clicking noise.
That clicking noise, that when they and they start to ramp up.
Yep. And so I'm like jumping every 5 minutes. I was like, fuck this, I'm leaving. So I just left the classroom.
Yeah, yeah.
And started doing a little kind of a walk around, make sure no students were stepping in rattlesnakes. But that's my snake story.
Yep, there you go. That's the snake story from the Everyday Sniper Podcast. You got Mike and Frank out here. We're on the range, actually. Guys are at lunch right now.
No wind.
No wind, man. Gorgeous day. We got wind, just not enough.
Yeah, it's enough to push you off the target, but it's not enough to be like, okay, we're holding, you know, a mil at 700 yards or something.
Well, we got enough 308s in here where you're seeing it.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot of movement there. There are some, throw the pro tip out right now. When you guys are setting up your rifles, think about where your reticle is in relation to your parallax and your target, because you're trying to get your reticle to be on the same plane as your target. So when you move your head around, your reticle's not moving so much on the target. It gets to a point where you're not resting your cheek on the cheek rest like you should. Your cheek needs to be flush and on the cheek rest, and if you need to move it up and down, move it up and down. But you need to be straight and back behind the rifle.
You want to fall asleep on your rifle. You want that chin and cheek mirror to fall asleep on and then bring the scope to you. And that's one of the biggest things we do. People ask about fundamentally what we see wrong in classes. And we know it's follow through is our big one. Trigger control is the issue. And then, you know, people don't understand natural point of aim and how to close your eyes, go through a couple breathing cycles. And you should be doing that given time and opportunity. And in a class setting, when we're gathering dope, we're giving you that time and opportunity to set it up. The dry fire is your fine tune for that natural point of aim. You're making sure the reticle stays on target when you dry fire and it's not moving off. Well, the other thing we're seeing, scope adjustments.
Scope adjustments is huge.
Huge.
This class.
We just don't see the guys using the parallax every yard line like
their
they
elevation,
should.
Elevation inaccurately up and down.
Yeah, they're messing up a lot of up and down. And we see this in spurts where we see a class where everybody's kind of tuned in and hip to what their optic is doing. And then we see a class where guys kind of are newer and they're not understanding their optic. They don't understand the direction. And they just kind of do a natural turn, which usually turns them the wrong way. They don't either look or realize the numbers get bigger, which way is left, which way is up. So pay attention to that. And we always look at it like for windage especially. We're holding wind, but there are times when you want to dial it. You look at your thumb. And if I hold my hand straight out like a knife hand, I'm gonna come down with a knife hand.
Like a Judy chop.
Judy chop, a total Judy chop. So I'm gonna give you a straight on hatchet Judy chop. My thumb is over the top.
Don't chop Judy, just Judy chop.
Right, exactly. So you're gonna roll your thumb away to go left and roll your thumb down to go right, okay? With the windage hand, if we take our Judy chop, and we turn it sideways. And I'm demonstrating so you guys can see.
Yeah, exactly. Raise your hand if you don't understand.
Yes, yes. So I have my Judy Chop hand sideways now where my thumb is pointing to the right. Okay, my left hand thumb is pointing to the right. If I turn my thumb and my thumb goes to the right, I'm going to go up. If I bring my thumb back, it's going to go down. So my thumb is going...
In most scope manufacturers nowadays.
Unless you have a backward Schmittenbender.
Exactly.
You know, so understand what your scope is doing and look at that adjustment. You know, and it's a learning thing. You got to get down on the fundamentals. You got to take your time. You got to be consistent on
stuff. You
got
to relax.
Right. That's the big thing. Don't overthink it. You know, we got a lot of guys that are still worried about software. And let's get our hits and we'll line up. Understand... What we gave you with the software, like yesterday, we shot them at 600 and we lined that up. Well, a lot of the guys were using Hornaday, a lot of Hornaday ammo out here. We line them up at 600 using their muzzle velocity. Okay? That's tri-dope still. That doesn't mean, well, then there's also the shooter element. What? Because we'll see a lot
that
of...
That is the biggest X factor in your gun, period.
Yes. The vertical spread we see... And we'll see it, that guys are either floating on their bag and not letting the bag support the back of the rifle. So if you're floating on that bag in any way, when you fire in recoil, you'll see that you'll sink down, okay? So you're not in your shoulder pocket, you're not bringing your core weight stacked behind the rifle. Phil Vallejo did a video. Did you see his video where
I
he showed that?
His video.
He did a video where he, without the rear bag, he showed going high, bringing the rifle into your shoulder pocket, bringing your belt line forward, and then settling down behind it, which pins the rifle between your shoulder and the bipod and locks it in place. Under that, you just want your rear bag to hold up the bottom of the rifle. So when it recoils, it doesn't try to sink in under your shoulder pocket.
That's what you're doing with your support hand, is you're supporting that rear bag and its function. Its function is, once you get it into position, what I like to do personally is put the bag down, put the gun on the bag, and then get it so that my reticle is just below my target. And then I use my face to crush down on the bag, and then I have the proper amount of tightness. I can support that with my non-firing hand to keep it in that same location, no problem. Just you know, squeeze it up just
right.
A little bit to make sure that all the slack is taken out of the bag so you don't experience that sagging of the bag when you pull the trigger because now your round's high.
And that's where you get the vertical spread. And you'll start to see the dope don't line up, the dope don't line up, because there's such a big amount of vertical spread. I mean, we're looking at vertically, we're probably on average about 3 MOA vertically were these targets.
Yep.
And we're easily seeing guys, not every time, in various moments when their attention wanders, that they'll get like 4 or 5 minutes of vertical spread, you know? And so you have to really be on top of that body position. You have to really be on top and recognize we're not laying on top of the bags. You know what I mean? We're not laying on top of the rifle and dropping our bipod down so low where you're kind of laying on the rifle and you really can't get your hand underneath it. What guys will do is lay on the bag, on the rifle, and their support hand isn't necessarily under the stock and supporting the stock. And so there's less movement vertically in the back.
What I've become a fan of just in probably the last year is using a big, heavy bag in the rear.
Yeah.
Using it, especially when you're doing prone shooting.
You know what I'm seeing a lot of guys with experience using? The Game Changer pint.
Yes, that saved my ass that entire last match.
I'm seeing a lot of guys.
Pint-size Game Changer.
Pint-size Game Changer.
Go-to bag, hands down.
For rear bags and when they need it because they're not using a rear bag, so they're dual-using it. The Game Changer pint on the Barricade and then the Game Changer pint on a rear bag as a rear bag when they don't need it as a support bag. You know, so they're doing that. And I see a lot of that, and I see a lot of success using that. Now, you said you went kind of minimalistic, and you shot better going minimalistic on a Barricade, right?
On the last course of fire, yeah. My mentality behind it was, you know, I don't train enough with, you know, all this extra equipment. I just want to fundamentally shoot. I dial my wind on. I use different lots of ammo so I can prove to myself that it really doesn't matter as far as loaded ammo is concerned. Nowadays, a lot of it is so close together that you don't have to worry as
much.
Right,
it's good.
And then you know, getting onto a barricade, because like many people, positional shooting is not my strong suit. However, this time I was like, you know, I'm going to take a different approach. I'm going to let the barricade support the gun. I'm going to get behind the gun and I'm going to steady the gun. I'm going to take a breath and I'm going to take a shot. And I'm not going to worry about the clock. I don't care about what time it is. I'm going to get my points as I get my points.
The hits is the quickest thing you could do.
Exactly.
If you get the hit, you're faster than anybody because you got the hit, you're going to go to the next round and you're going to hit again.
Yeah, you're so getting points. You're right. Not missing and missing and missing and missing.
Missing is where you burn up time.
Fighting your equipment and getting frustrated. I was like, you know what? This is like our Las Vegas. So, you know, the boys get together and we go out and shoot this match one time a year. We go out and we hang out and we have fun. I do not want to be frustrated through this whole thing.
Right. You want to enjoy yourself.
Why do I want to fight? Yeah, I just want to enjoy myself. It's a course of fire that I didn't have to develop. I'm just going to shoot it the way it was intended to be shot and then move on with my life.
Yep. Yep. So. I tell you, you can see which one of the things too that we're looking at. I noticed a larger number in this class where we're getting really good groups, but then that one flyer that's even beyond normal.
Drink water.
We're drinking water. It's hot out here, man. Although we got clouds, so it's been nice. Gorgeous morning, I have to say.
Very nice.
Little breeze. We had a little breeze. Enough wind. The 6.5's not as much, but we're seeing a lot of windage for guys that are them.
Got a nice little tack drive in Tac Ops 308 out here, too.
Ooh, the Tac Ops. Man, I talked to Mike recently. Mike had some drama going on with the Impact Precision guys. He was all upset.
The Signio.
Yeah, so Mike calls me up, and he's like, oh, what the fuck? You know these guys? And I'm like, yeah, Mike, don't sweat it. So then I talked to him because, like, my daughter was moving her horse. So one of his guys gave my daughter a hand in California. One of the guys there that works with Mike stopped over in Ventura, met with her, helped her move her horse over. So I've been talking to Mike like every day, but it's funny. I sent him a picture. I'm on the line yesterday. I go to Resignia. I take a photograph of Andy with his Tac Ops. I send it to Resignia. I said, hey, we got one of your guns in class. Not even 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Whose is it? When did he
What's
get?
What's his name? What's his serial?
What's the serial number? What's yeah. Is that my suppressor on there? Or is that somebody else's?
What's going on?
Is that somebody else's suppressor? Or is that my suppressor on there? No, it's your suppressor, Mike. It's always, oh, how's it shooting? Is it the best gun in the class? I'm like, is it the quietest?
It shoots good.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it shoots really good.
Tac Ops are actually really good. Tac Ops is that thing that causes so much drama because people don't believe it because it's Mike's version of a Remington 700. And it shoots better than anything you've out there. And it's like, you know, sub quarter minute with factory federal ammo. It does its thing. And that's Mike's deal. You have to look at a Tac Ops rifle like the most tricked out custom 1911 you've ever seen. So think about it that way. You could take a 1911, you can get one. What's a cheesy 1911 cost? Like $800-900?
Yeah, if that. I mean, like $500 if you want just a standard USGI.
Okay, so now you take that kind of thing and you give it to one of these guys that turns it into a $3,000-4,000 1911.
Yeah, like people do with their Glocks.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's Tac Ops rifles, you know? So they're like the tricked out, handmade, every like oddity, weird thing you've ever heard of the, you know, timing the barrel to 12 o'clock, spiral threads at 250 inch pounds of pressure, blah, blah, blah. Because there's no, you know what I mean? There's no cold bores. There's none of this stuff. It's just like Mike does so much and there's so much hand knocking down the edges. You know, all that paint job that he has is special.
Bird song
stuff. So people don't know, like Mike's rifles look really ugly in pictures. Because that paint is special design stuff. They use them in submarines.
I was about to say, they use them in deep sea stuff.
Too. Yeah, like the gel crap that he has on his stock is like the sound dampening paint they use in a sub. And then the green and stuff that he does, which will end up looking like this weird Frankenstein Halloween green in a picture. It's actually olive drab in real life.
Yeah,
but in photographs, it's
very clean.
Yes. It's got like this IR reflective and does something and absorbs. And so it looks really weird in photographs. But when you have one in your hand, you could totally see it. And then when you shoot one, it's lights out.
Yeah. Every single one that I've seen shoots lights out, bottom line. They all come with a little small test target. And it is a super nice, smooth shooting gun. Even when you get behind it, you know, where you would experience a recoil from a 308 and a hunting gun or something like that. This is not your average hunting gun or anything.
The downside
that.
Is it can take you 2 years to get it. And I know Mike just got a whole bunch of new contracts. So what happens is because he's a law enforcement guy, you go to the end of the line. So anytime, like if you're in the queue and you're being worked on, and then like, you know, LA Sheriff says, Mike, we need these three guns done, your stuff gets dropped. He does their three guns, and then he'll pick you back up after. And you have to hope while he's doing those three guns, some police department in Georgia doesn't say, Mike, do our three guns. Then you go to the back of that line. And then, you know, Detroit will say, hey, Mike, do our guns. And then you'll get to the back of that line. So 2 years later, you'll end up getting your rifle. And it's not because it's anything with your rifle. It's just that's the priority that Mike puts on it.
If you come across a used one, pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah, if
it's within your budget and you come across to use one, no doubt that is going to shoot, period. Pick it up, run on, get out to the range. If you want a good shooting, a 308 rifle, that is the one.
99% of the owners don't shoot them or baby them to such a degree where you get a used one is almost identical to getting a new one.
Or they trade them for an AI.
Yeah, they do that too. There's a lot of that. I mean, like I said, I like him. I like Mike. I get along. Mike's from Connecticut originally and lives in Beverly Hills now. We go out there. The funnest thing is when you go to Beverly Hills and you go to the restaurants and eat with him, that he's like rock star.
On Rodeo Drive?
Yeah, Rodeo Drive, yes.
You don't spice it up. It's Rodeo.
Rodeo Drive over there. He's like, Mr. Mike, Mr. And Rodeo Drive is like the tourist place. So you're kind of like, okay, we're going to go to the tourist place in the Rodeo Drive strip mall. But then you go to the fancy restaurant with him somewhere else, and it's the same thing. It's like he gets treated exactly the same, where they're like, oh my God, Mike just came in the door.
So he's like an international man of mystery.
He totally is, man. And he almost always has some LA cops and stuff with him. So that they're all trying to kiss up to that stuff because they don't want to get Rodney King'd or anything.
Four clubs and a king.
Can't say that. No, they'll make us look bad. I'm only kidding. You know how it goes. That's ancient history. But no, we're running along. Good weather. I tell you what, the weather really has worked in our favor this class.
Raining yesterday afternoon, and it just cooled everything down to a point where we're like, okay, let's get some shooting done. And that, again, look closely at that when you're looking at your data, because that will adjust some of your elevation out to distance.
Well, we zeroed everybody at 100 yards. We had the rainstorm came in, and it was the heavier part of the rain, because a lot of it was just kind of spittle and, you know, just cool enough to cool you off. But then we had one little, like, half hour where it came down pretty good. There was standing water on your mat.
It cooled off fast.
Yes. Well, everybody, because their stuff was all wet, their hands were wet, everything was wet, everybody started hitting high at 100. You know, so you will see what happens is that water creates increased pressure. The bullet doesn't worry about the water in the air. What happens is the water internally. Internal ballistics worry about water and rain. External ballistics don't. Okay, the external ballistics is just high humidity is really all it comes down to.
So what we did to defeat that is we put down all the paper targets and we said, all right, we're going to steel at this point. So we picked out larger portions of steel versus going for the, you know, minute and a half, 2 minute stuff.
Dude, they rocked the minute, sub-minute targets. Everybody's rocking.
We had sub-minute targets on the 300 yards because we were able to go from those larger targets.
Two and three.
To a smaller target and then, you know, find that data in between. So that really helped us out as far as dropping all the paper stuff, because it's just going to get soggy and wet and in the way, and then you can't do anything with it. They're going to shoot it up, and it's just going to rip off the paper. It's going to, it's going to destroy everything.
Yeah,
so
yesterday was a sub-minute day. You know, the class was sub-minute yesterday, consistent. Yeah, consistent.
Especially right at the end of the day, when we got to the end of the day, and then this morning when we went for what challenge did we do this morning?
Cold bore at six
on a diamond. Yep.
And that was a mess up. Guys didn't have their head on right. They had dope from the day before. They didn't use the same dope. Not everybody.
Change. We say this all the time.
Right.
Check your atmosphere. Just because you zeroed in the afternoon the day before doesn't mean your zero is going to be perfect that next morning.
At 5 o'clock when I got in my truck to drive home, it said 94 degrees on my.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 94, 95.
94, 95. This morning, 68 degrees.
Zero wind.
Right, no wind. Yesterday, we had weather. We had that. And it's like, and instead of guys needed like 3.6, there were some guys with like 3.4 on the gun. And it's like, maybe you should have went 3.8. you know, 3.7 at a click, you know what I mean? As it gets colder. Think about if you're getting that 20 degree swing plus or minus, if it's 20 degrees cooler, add a click. If it's 20 degrees hotter, take a click off. You know what I mean? And look at it that way. And really, you can go 2/10.
And it comes with this experience behind the gun, too. So what is your gun doing? You need to annotate that stuff. That would have been a perfect opportunity to sit back and go, okay, well, on this degrees, this is what my gun was doing. And then the next day, all right, this is what my gun was doing at this distance. Because that is the exact distance that we used to dope the software that we were going to use to try dope this morning.
Right, right.
So they should have all had that perfect data.
In Mark's weaponized math worked, and he wrote an article on it. I'm going to put it on the blog post for Sniper's Hide. He sent it to me Thursday night, so I wasn't going to get out of fucking bed and go post his article. You know, I was watching something. I forgot what. Oh, you know what I watched?
What'd you watch?
Really cool. I watched a Russian movie on like iTunes called T-34. And it's about this, in World War II, it was a World War II flick, this brand new lieutenant tank commander gets kind of like a tank unit, and there's only one tank left in this village. The Germans are coming through. So this guy's like, oh, I was an A student in tank class, because all his experienced guys are rolling their eyes that they have, you know, this young tank lieutenant. So the Russians are coming up on the village. It's the last village before Moscow.
You like tank movies.
I love tank movies, man. Tank and submarine movies I like. So I go over, or he goes over, and he sets up an ambush for the German tanks. And it's one company of German tanks, I think 5 or 6 tanks.
I should get you a tank for your birthday.
There you go. Remote.
You said tank like 20 times just now. You're like very excited.
I love it, man. It was good, because you know what? I like Russian film World War II flicks, because I think they film them really well. So I like watching them, even though I got to deal with the subtitles. I think the Russians do good war movies. So this movie, this guy goes in and takes out like the entire German tank company. And then the tank commander for the Germans, they kind of fight to a standoff. The tank commander is wounded. He comes out of the tank. He shoots the Russian and wounds him. Well, then he becomes a prisoner of war. And so the Germans are getting their ass kicked by the Soviets in the tank battles. So this same tank commander goes to a prison, and what they're going to do is they're going to get Russian tank people that are in prison, give them a tank, and have them fight with blanks against real Germans. So basically, it's like, if you live, we'll let you go kind of thing, or you live a day. But
yeah, but you're cannon fodder right, for the real guys.
For the real guys. So we're going to take our cadets, and our cadets are going to attack you. We're going to give you blanks, and we're going to give them live rounds, and you got to win. You know, so this guy's like, okay, well, when they bring him a
tank. You gotta be quick.
Yeah. When they bring him a tank, they find like 4 or 5 live rounds in it, and they find a grenade. And so they stuff him, because there's still bodies in the tank, because the Germans are like, ha ha ha, clean the bodies out of your tank. And so he goes over, and when they find that there's live shells still in the tank, they put them in the bodies and bury the bodies in one spot so they can go back and get them.
So they go back and get them. Yeah.
So then they repair the tank. They do this stuff and they train and practice up. And when they go to go live, they have 5 live rounds and the Germans don't expect it. So the Germans come kind of muttering in with their Panther tanks and stuff. And the next thing you know, a live round.
Like, what's up with y'all now?
Yes. And then he escapes the prison and he runs to Czechoslovakia. So this is basically the story of them fighting from the prison to Czechoslovakia with their tank. And it was a good flick, man. But like I said, you got to do subtitles. Well, our lunch just showed up. We want to call this one good. We'll end an early one.
Yeah, right, this will be just a quick half-hour session.
Yeah, a little quick half-hour thing. Like I said, we got some stuff going on. We'll talk about this class after. We're in the middle of class, but I want to get this up tonight just because we're a couple days into it, and we wanted some things to talk about. But the last thing... What about what we were saying the first day when anybody threw a flyer? What was the word of the day?
Oh, it was, snake.
Yeah, rattlesnake.
Yeah, it was a rattlesnake.
What's this guy over here? Rattlesnake.
Rattlesnake.
Mm-hmm.
He showed up.
So anytime somebody flinched or threw a flyer, it was rattlesnake. All right, and you know what, too? I got Jeremy who brought us lunch over there. We're going to grab it in a minute, but I'll have to get a little mix-in podcast to him because he's shooting a Sniper's Hide rifle, the APO, and he actually has the one with the really Gucci test target. So we'll let him talk about it because I think he's doing fantastic with
it.
But
he's just dropping bombs out there, dude. He is. You give him a wind call and he's spot on every time. Like you don't have any question about if he is not going to use your advice.
Yeah, yeah, because it works.
Yeah.
So, all righty, man, you've been listening to the Everyday Sniper. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of it. And we will talk to you guys soon.
Peace.